Guest is comedian Rita Rudner, who has made 5 appearances on the David Letterman show.
Six.
And it's going up. Mm-hmm. You may have also seen her on the HBO special, the Catch a Rising Star special. She's done stand-up at Caesars and at the Sands in Atlantic City, as well as at many of the major comedy clubs on the East Coast. She got her start in show business singing and dancing in Broadway musicals. Last night, Rita Rudner did a benefit in Philadelphia for Women's Way. Tonight and Saturday night, she performs at the Comedy Works at 126 Chestnut Street. Women's Way is sponsoring a week of events in response to the notion that feminists don't have a sense of humor. So in conjunction with that, they're going to be sponsoring the Philadelphia premiere of the film Comedienne on March 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. So that begins a week from today. And that will be held at the International House at 37th and Chestnut Streets. For information about the screening, you can call 387-5125. For Rita Rudner's performance, that's at 126 Chestnut Street tonight and Saturday night at the Comedy Works. Welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you.
Why'd you move from Broadway musicals to comedy?
I guess there are a lot of different reasons. One of them was that I did Broadway for a long, long time, and it wasn't new anymore. And I just looked around and I said, there aren't too many female comedians, and if I'm good at that, I could probably be successful easier because there's so many singers and dancers and actresses. So I said, I'll go where no woman has gone before, or very few women have gone before.
Did you think of yourself as being a funny person?
No, I just kind of learned how. I guess I was, because it turned out that I am, but I didn't know it at the time.
You really are funny, and I can't believe that someone who didn't already have a, quote, history of being funny through stamina become a good comedian.
Stamina. I might have been funny, but I was so quiet that I never said anything. So if I had talked all those years, I might have been very funny. I just never talked. I was a dancer.
You use that quietness on stage, don't you think?
I don't think I use it. I just think that's how I am. You know, that's just how I am.
Because you have a very reserved manner on stage.
That's just how I am in person, though. It's the same thing. Once somebody wrote about me that I was deliberately demure. And I said, it's a terrible thing to say. He doesn't know. What does he think? I'm raucous in person? He's never met me. You know, like I'm putting all this on. This is just it.
Do you remember your first time at a comedy club?
Yeah, yeah. It was amazing.
What was it like? What was your material like? What were you doing?
It's amazing how stupid that I could be. And when you don't know anything. Yeah, I wrote this stuff and I thought it was really funny. And I said, I'm going to go up and be funny. It's going to be so easy. And you have to stand online and get a number at the comedy clubs in New York, which is where I started, and I got a number. And you go back late at night, and they put you on at 2 in the morning to a few people who have had too much to drink, and I read this stuff that didn't make any sense because I didn't know anything about constructing comedy, and they were laughing, but they were laughing because I was so bad. They weren't laughing because I was doing anything. So I said, well, at least they're laughing. Now I got to figure out how to make them laugh for the right reason. And then I just started, it became an obsession, and I learned how to do it.
Do you remember any of the material that you did then?
Yeah, it's not even material. It was nothing.
Could you mention any of it on the air?
You want to hear my first joke that I ever wrote that I thought was funny? I remember I was walking home from ballet class, and I said, boy, this is a great joke. This is going to knock them on their ears. I used to date a trapeze artist. He drew trapezes. I thought that was so funny.
Oh,
see? But it's not funny. It's not a funny joke. See? And I thought that was funny. But see, it's funny for the wrong reason. It's funny because it's such a bad joke.
So you told that on your first comedy
thing. And everyone stared at me. I said, well, I guess that's not so funny. I better find out what is funny.
So what would you come up with the second time?
Well, then I'd started hanging around clubs and listening to comedians and figuring out why they were funny and getting comedy albums out of the library and figuring out why they were funny. And then I just started writing, and every night that you can get stage time. It's very competitive to get stage time in New York. You just kind of stood up, and my goal for like 2 years was to be funny for 5 minutes. If I could just be funny for 5 minutes, that was all I wanted. It took me about 2 years to become funny for 5 minutes.
You were storing up material?
Yeah, because I'd get like one line, and then I'd have to find another line that would go with it, and then put that together. And then I'd have to go through millions of other lines before I found a third line that could go with those two lines.
Well, one thing I noticed the time I saw you and David Letterman was that everything interconnects, but in this almost stream of consciousness way.
That's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to even do it better than that. I think I can do it better than that, but that's the best I've been able to do it so far.
You never do anything, I suppose, like, did you hear the one about, you know, where you break from the context that you've created?
No, I consciously try to stay, you know, within a form and to build it and to begin and middle and end it. But I don't think I do it great yet. Do it okay.
The first time when you really had the audience,
mm-hmm.
What was the moment where you really, what did you say when you realized that you had them? Where were you?
It's so gradual. The process of getting to know what you're doing is so gradual. It was never like a magic light coming on or something. It was always like, oh, this is a little better. So I never really knew. It's kind of evolves and you get a little better.
Was there a line in that night that you realized, this is really funny, I'll include that in the next one?
Yeah. Yeah. That's what happens when they're laughing. Then I make a mental note to put it in, leave that in. They're laughing. Also, a lot of times I bring a tape recorder and I tape and then I listen. I don't do it all the time because it gets so boring that I can't stand it. But once every couple months, and when I was starting out, I did it all the time. Now I just do it really when I'm trying out new material and when I'm trying to get 5 minutes together to get 5 minutes structured right for TV.
What about hecklers? Have they been a problem? Do hecklers behave differently with women comedians than men?
I just think it's real sad that some people say, you know, when they find out I'm a comedian, they go, what do? Put people down when they yell things out at you? I think it's real sad that a lot of people think that's what comedy is, because it's not. And I've been on stage every night practically for 3 years, and I've had maybe 4 times that someone heckled me. And it's just someone stupid usually who doesn't know anything, and it's really the exception. If they do heckle me, I just deal with it honestly and go on with my routine, but I don't like to deal with them because it breaks my routine.
You said that the comedy clubs are really competitive for time. Are comedians competitive with each other now, too?
Yeah, real competitive. We're friendly. We're real good friends, but almost every comedian I know is totally driven, and your idea is to get on stage, and it's hard because there are a lot of comedians.
Do you try not to hang out together too much because you'll end up inadvertently swapping material?
No, that really doesn't happen too much. I always, like, I have all these notebooks, and I go to the clubs at night, and I have friends, and I ask them, is this funny, and they help me. We help each other a lot more than we don't really steal from each other. I mean, there's always the one that's going to come from someplace else and come in and say, write down the material and try and go use it. But that's such an exception. Good comedians will never do that. They'll help each other.
You have a notebook, and it's open. What do you have it open to?
I was just trying to figure out new jokes because I like to write new jokes all the time, and I was walking around Philly and just, was just writing it, and it just turned out to be open to this. That's all.
You want to try any of them out on us?
No, see, they're not funny for a real long time. That's what people... I have real good friends that have been with me forever, and I call them up and I say, is this funny? And my real good friends, they don't want to hurt my feelings, they go, not yet. And my other friends who've heard enough go, no, it's not funny. Just don't talk to me anymore about it. But I just, you have to keep asking people. I just make friends with people sometimes when I'm staying in hotels, and I go down to the bar and, have a club soda or something because I can't drink anything before I go on, and just say, I wrote this today. Does this make any sense to you? Because I can't tell. I still can't tell. I need people to tell me.
Do you think that's true of other comedians, that they need that kind of feedback?
Yeah, you can't tell. You have to get on stage and look at the audience and say it, and it's always such a shock. Things I think that are hysterical aren't funny, and things that I just kind of casually think of, they're laughing at. It's just... whatever they say, it's really joke by jury, you know. They're the jury, whatever they say.
I remember Milt Josephsberg, who used to write for Jack Benny, once said to me that comedy writers never laugh at other people's jokes. Like, the greatest compliment is just saying, yeah, that's funny.
Oh, definitely. I never laugh. I watched Bill Cosby this morning on HBO. I think he's hysterical. I didn't laugh once. I thought he was so funny, I didn't laugh once. Because I was just listening to how he was doing it and what he was saying. And he's really funny, but I don't laugh. I went to see a show with my girlfriend and her little girl who's 11, and she turned to me in the middle and said, "It's so depressing to sit next to you. You never laugh. I'm not going to sit next to you anymore." So it's just the way it is.
How do you prepare to go on the David Letterman show?
I take my little tape recorder and I write down, like, I'm starting Letterman 7 because I just did my 6th appearance. I make a little Roman numeral, Letterman 7. And then I start to put together beginning, middle, and end and jam it into 5 minutes and tape record it and get it so I think it's good.
You going to call them up the next time you have 5 minutes of material?
No, the way it works is they call me if they're ready, and if I don't hear from them for a certain amount of time and I'm ready, then my manager will call them. It works different ways.
Is there any competition that you feel between Letterman and you, or Letterman and other comedians when they're on? Since
David Letterman?
Yeah, since he's... Because he's done so much stand-up himself, I wonder if he feels competitive with the comedians who guest on the program.
I don't feel it. I just think he's been wonderful to me. I'm so grateful to him for being, you know, for having me on the show and asking me back. I think he's great.
Does he hang out with young comedians?
No, because he's got a show to do, you know, and it's a real hard job to do a show 4 times a week, and he really has to concentrate. And, you know, everybody is very secluded when they're backstage. I sit in my room and I go over things over and over. I don't talk to people, and I've never even met another guest on the show unless I've gone up to them and said, "Hello, my name is Rita," and they said, "Nice," and they go to their corner and I go to my corner. We just all concentrate on what we're doing. It's not a party.
My guest is Rita Rudner, who's a comedian who'll be performing tonight and tomorrow night at the Comedy Works on 126 Chestnut Street. What do you think of the word comedian as opposed to comedian?
I just
the feminine version.
I just think it should be abolished. I think it's just, you're a comedian. I don't think it has to do with comedian, you know. Doesn't matter to me.
Have you noticed any patterns in women comedians as opposed to male comedians? Do you think that there's a different kind of humor that women are doing now?
I think more than there's a different kind of humor for women, there's a different kind of humor for every single person. Every single person who does comedy comes from their point of view, if they're any good. If they're coming from a general point of view, they're just not very good because they're not concentrating on what's special and unique about them. But I think each person who does that is going to be different no matter what they do. So I don't really see this big division between women and men. I see it between people who are doing comedy.
Do you see yourself as making any kind of statement by being a woman comedian?
No, not consciously. I think I am unconsciously. Because I was listening to my jokes last night. I did the benefit for Women's Way. I said, gee, I guess I am making statements here. But it's not consciously. It's just what comes out.
Do you do a lot of material about relationships, men and women?
Or? Well, I have to because I have them, you know, and things go on. It comes from my life. I can't ignore it. So you have to get it from your life. It can't be false or else everyone will know it.
So you probably do material about your child, too. You have a daughter who's 11?
Me? Where'd you hear that?
No.
Maybe it's illegitimate and I don't know I have her. No.
I thought you said earlier that...
I have a child?
I thought you said earlier that you were sitting next to your daughter?
Oh, my girlfriend's little girl.
Oh.
I got scared. I thought maybe I didn't know who the father was and I didn't know who I had a baby by. No babies.
People find out all kinds of things when they're a guest on this program. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, so you don't have any children.
No, it's my girlfriend's little girl. I'm an aunt. I mean, a fake aunt.
When you go on something like the Letterman show, is it ever disturbing that you've taken months or weeks of work and blown it nationwide?
It's so
in 5 minutes. Can you do it in a comedy club though after that?
Oh yeah, you can do it all the time. You can't do it on TV again, on Letterman show again, but it's so rewarding because it's on tape and everyone could see that I did it. And I did it on television. It's just the best feeling. For a couple weeks after that, I'm almost happy, which is not normal for me. No, it's very satisfying to do it, and I like the challenge of getting together another 5 minutes.
So who are the comedians who you really studied back when you were studying comedians to see what was funny?
There are a lot of people I like for different reasons. I love Woody Allen for his writing. I love Albert Brooks because he's so crazy. I love Bob Newhart because he's so subtle. I love Jack Benny. He was my all-time favorite because it was just the best character in the world. I think those are my major four that are there. I'm sure there are other people that I admire, too.
What do you think of Joan Rivers?
She's not my style. I think she's real funny at what she does, and I kind of enjoy watching her. But it's not my style. I like a quieter style. But she's great at what she does.
Do you feel like you've developed a persona on stage?
Yeah. Yeah, and hasn't been on purpose. It just kind of happened that's what it is. And now when I'm on stage, sometimes, well, I just feel if it's right or if it's not. It's a feeling. And if I write a new joke and I say it, then I think, oh, and I go, oh, no, that's not right for me at all. I throw it away. You can tell what's right and what's not right.
When you meet someone at a party or on a program or mm-hmm. whatever, are they just like waiting for you to be really funny and break them up?
I'm never funny really off stage unless I can be if I want to be, but I'd rather just be a person, you know. I don't want to have to be a jester all the time. And I think like within 2 minutes after they meet me, they realize that there's not going to be too many jokes that are going to come spewing forth.
Are they disappointed?
No, I don't think so. I just think they're amazed that someone who isn't hyper can be a comedian. Because people are very used to hyper people now being comedians, and I'm not.
You're really doing a lot of different venues, from Atlantic City to the comedy clubs to David Letterman. Yeah. It's a lot of different kinds of audiences, I think, as well as venues. Mm. What's Atlantic City like performing there?
It's very, very difficult, and I love doing all the different audiences because it's a challenge to figure them out. And Atlantic City is the hardest audience of them all because they're much older and they've all lost all of their money. And nothing is very funny after that. And they're there to see the singer and they're ordering drinks. And it's a huge room. Comedy is always best in a small room with tables close together because if your friends are, you know, the people next to you are laughing, you're going to be laughing. So there's every single thing stacked against me that could possibly be. And to triumph over that is so major. And I've learned to do it pretty well. I think I can do it better, but I'm learning, you know.
It must be hard, too, when you're opening for a famous singer.
It is hard.
Because sometimes people think of the opening act as what you endure until you get to the people who you're actually paying for.
That's what they think. So it's such a challenge to win them over. And this last time I opened for Sergio Franchi at the Atlantis, and I've been to Atlantic City, I think, maybe 6 times now, and it was the best it's ever been, and it was so rewarding that I'd learned how to do it. I remember stepping on stage in Atlantic City the first time thinking it was going to be like a hot crowd in a comedy club on a Saturday night and having them all stare at me and not knowing what to do.
Putting myself in your position a minute, I would think that if I was opening for somebody who performed an act that I considered really outside of my sensibility, mm-hmm. that I'd assume I'd be performing for an audience that didn't share my sensibility either and that I was bound to bomb.
Well, I've just learned how to do it. There's certain jokes. I try to write jokes that are funny to people who are breathing, you know? So I get there are some specialized jokes I have that I don't do there. And I just get together all my breathing material and, you know, let's see if they eat food. And if they've ever dated or if they've ever been, you know, these are things they can relate to. So I get the most general things that I can get to and say them.
Would you ever have somebody else write material for you?
I don't think so. I have 2 sentences in my act that someone else wrote for me, but they're tags to jokes that have already existed and they just thought of something to write after that. And I love them so much that I say them. And those are the only 2 sentences that I didn't write.
Would you feel disingenuous doing material on stage that wasn't really yours?
I really think I would. I can't say, you know, because I haven't run out of material and I haven't been exposed so that I really need to get stuff. So maybe later I'll feel differently. But right now I really can't imagine saying, unless I'm in a play or a movie or TV thing, which I would love to do too, then I can see doing that. But with my comedy, it's got to come from me, I think, so far.
You grew up in New York, right?
I've been in New York for 10 years. I grew up in Miami.
Oh, well, there are plenty of nightclubs in Miami. Did you ever get taken by your parents to nightclubs when you were young to,
I did.
To see comedians who'd...
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah, and I didn't know that I was funny, as I said, because I never talked. But I always had the capacity to remember jokes. I still remember going to... I was in love with John Davidson when I was 11 or something. And I made my parents take me to the Fontainebleau, and I remember London Lee opened for him. And I could just... I still remember, like, five jokes that he said from when I was 11. I could just remember jokes. I don't know why.
That's strange.
Isn't that strange? And I never knew I was going to be a comedian. It's still amazing to me. If I don't do it for a week or more, I look at somebody else on stage and I go, do I do that? How do I do it?
What I remember most is not specific jokes, but just a lot of really sexist innuendo from comedians from when I was young.
Mm.
Do you have a lot of recollections of that?
I always like jokes. I remember jokes. You know, I remember London Lee, his mother, you know, he did this whole rich thing, and his grandmother or his nurse used to hide the booze in a baby bottle, and he was 22 before he could walk. That's a joke. You know, you have an action and a result. And I was like those kinds of jokes.
Well, I look forward to seeing you perform some more. And I want to thank you very much for talking with us today.
Thank you.
My guest has been comedian Rita Rudner, who did a benefit last night for Women's Way in Philadelphia. They're sponsoring a week of events in response to the notion that feminists don't have a sense of humor. So Rita Rudner will perform tonight if you want to see her at Friday and Saturday. It's tonight and tomorrow night at the Comedy Works at 126 Chestnut Street. And also in conjunction with this Women's Way Week, they're going to be showing the movie Comedian, which will be shown March 1st, 2nd, and 3rd at the International House at 37th and Chestnut Streets. Again, Rita Rudner performs tonight and tomorrow night at the Comedy Works at 126 Chestnut Street. You may have seen her, by the way, on David Letterman and on the HBO comedy special was it the Comedy Works? No, I mean...
Catch a Rising Star.
Catch a Rising Star, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it's 2 minutes after 4 o'clock. This is Fresh Air on WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. In just a couple of minutes on Fresh Air, we'll hear from Nat Hentoff, who will be discussing the issue of the responsibility of the press and the First Amendment. First, let's listen to a recording from the album The Cotton Club, an anthology on the Stash record label. And this is called Honey, It Must Be Love.
Yeah.